Hey guys, welcome to the number one fitness and combat sports podcast.
Yeah.
We're officially, what was it, number 43 of the UFC podcast. So
45.
Yeah, they said UFC podcast, but not MMA podcast.
Yeah, we do a whole bunch of other stuff other than MMA, but the only thing they had wrong was we've been doing it since June now. May, June, July.
Yeah. So they released this list. Who was it by?
Oh, good question. I didn't actually catch his name. Hold on. I know. It's like we got an email this morning.
What's the actual company though that does
Pod,
it?
I think it's called Podfeed.
Podfeed.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I can't.
Not too sure on the author, but Podfeed releases like lists according to categories.
I kind of can't pronounce his name. No, it's Feedspot. I'm scared I'm going to butcher his name.
I'll butcher it for you. Anuj Angarwal. He's a founder of Feedspot, and he wanted to tell us that we are one of the top 45 Ultimate Fighting Championship podcasts on the, well, on the web, but that means in the world.
Oh shit! There we go.
So of the tons of, you know, MMA podcasts out there that cover specifically the UFC, we are number 43.
Oh, okay.
According to our downloads, I think. Although our downloads, I would say that our YouTubers.
That's a different ball game.
A different ball game. Gotta be happy with that.
Yeah, well, I'm happy with that. The only criticism I had to say was he said one podcast a month.
We do about four or five a month, to be honest. Yeah.
We're up to like episode 54, 55 right now.
Yeah. Not even that. I think we're almost at 50. We're pretty close to, it would be around 45, wouldn't it?
No, we're past 50.
Are we?
Yeah, we're way past 50.
Oh, well, if we're around 50, then how can you do that within less than a year?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be. I don't know. I don't know how it was counting. Maybe we went off of views or something off YouTube.
That means we've done more videos than even once a week. Because once a week would be 52. And it hasn't even been a full year that we've done this for.
And on average, release about at least 10 clips a week.
Yeah, but
that's consistent. I mean, anyway. But thank you, sir. We appreciate your support, and especially thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Because we weren't checking. We had no idea. Anyway.
I did. Well, I knew those kind of things exist, but you never look up yourself.
Yeah. Because we like to measure our performance from past episodes and views and clips that we're not really concerned about.
We just
about.
Make self-imposed goals, to be honest.
Yes, correct.
All right, let's get into the meat and potatoes. Derek Brunson versus Kevin Holland. Interesting. You were going for Derek Brunson, and I was going for Kevin Holland. I just believe Kevin Holland was going to win. It wasn't an emotional thing. But the main takeaway I saw was that this was the first time that these guys went into the championship rounds, right? And I got to see what kind of level of conditioning. And to be honest, Brunson's conditioning wasn't that good either. Holland's conditioning was a bit better. Obviously, being the thinner, lankier guy, could probably make welterweight quite comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
But I was impressed with Colin's flurries in the first and second round. The first one was probably the most significant. You know, there was a few shots that just grazed Brunson that probably would have taken him out. But as we were getting into the later rounds, the amount of control Brunson had was, you have to, even the issue was the control time here, you would have almost over a round. He would usually have around 3 or 4 minutes of control time per round, right? But it wasn't, they weren't significant takedowns, I would say, because he didn't do much work. Like, the amount of ground strikes, Kevin actually threw more ground strikes than him.
Yeah. Well, there was just a few things that I had to write down, like, right off the bat, was that Kevin had a 4-inch reach advantage. And in the first 10 seconds, Herb Dean just goes, watch those fingers. Because he doesn't want another eye poke. And I think he's getting a little flat because he wants to take those eye pokes so much. Well, one thing that he's actually doing now is he's actually going backstage to his fighters, and he says he's trying to be a lot more strict now with eye pokes.
Yeah,
and so if he sees you doing this, he's going to be like calling you, give you a verbal warning, and if he sees you doing it again, he's going to start deducting points.
Yeah.
And
it's just good that they don't do that. What happened a couple of weeks back about the Leon Edwards issue. Yeah, it's good that they're trying to impose more stuff about eye pokes, but you can only do so much with those gloves. It needs to be that curl shape, but obviously we've already had a we've got a video already on should they change the UFC gloves, and pretty clearly we agree that they should and make them curled. Even the Pride gloves were very like a curled shape, and they had a little bit more covering over the fingers, which forced them to curl in that natural shape. It means they don't really expend any more energy holding their hands anyway, just to keep them closed in the first place. But it's good that they're stopping the eye pokes just as much, especially when someone like Kevin Holland, he likes to have open palm, and it looks like he actually wanted to touch gloves, but you're not too sure. He uses that very, very long guard when just to make distance as well with those long limbs. The interesting thing was that Kevin Holland, I believe he's got a brown belt, either a brown or black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Travis Luter, Travis Luter being his coach, and a former fighter on the UFC Fighter as well, the UFC Fighter show. So the Ultimate Fighter show. I was a bit confused with Holland because he would continue to talk to Brunson, which is good for breaking down a fighter or just being himself and being relaxed in the moment. I get it, right? He's expending a lot of energy talking. Yeah. He's expending a lot of energy, and I know he has got the cardio for it because every round he did not sit on the stool. He might have had one leg on the stool, but he was just chilling. But he's like talking to Habib. And
Yeah, I saw it when he was like, he was even saying during the commentary, call the shots out for me, brother. And at one point, Derek was on top of him. He just looked at Khabib. He's like, what should I do, man? He was actually asking him for advice. I don't know if he was taking a piss or trying to hype it up. Or
I think he was taking the piss. And he wrote a post later on saying, oh, I managed to. That was the first time Derek Brunson had ever been taken down in the UFC ever.
Really? Okay. He's had an extensive career, though.
He does have a very extensive career, but he tends to be the more dominant wrestler.
Yeah.
And that just showed. So in that last round, Kevin Holland played it to Habib's advice. That could be true. I don't know how. There was a few issues with that. Like, all right, so he did take him down in the last round, right? But it didn't really lead to anything significant.
Yeah.
And I would say Brunson was very fatigued.
Yes. He was just almost laying on top of him at the end. I mean, because he was expending so much energy. Well, one thing, the reason why he expended so much energy was because he attempted the arm triangle from the half guard in the second round.
Yeah.
And that's becoming increasingly a thing now. Islam Makhachev did that to Drew Dober.
They're not tired enough.
Yeah, you know, if you're in a really, really experienced grappler and you know how to use your body to lever against theirs, then arm triangle from the half guard is definitely a tool. But if someone doesn't really have that much experience, or if you're tired, it's quite hard to get that submission.
I think Brunson could have got it because, well, Kevin Holland was talking to him while he was still in the chokehold, but the issue was being still in half guard, right? If you do want to submit someone in half guard with a triangle choke like that,
you gotta be sure.
They have to be tired as fuck.
Yeah.
They have to be. It worked for Islam Makhachev because obviously that squeezing pressure that the Russians have is different, as well as Drew Dober. He was getting dominated that entire fight. He was so tired being on bottom trying to escape. He had Islam's weight on him the entire time. That's the only reason it worked. And I understand what you're meaning is Derek kind of gassed himself, and especially gassed out his arms trying to squeeze the life out of Holland when he wasn't really in the best. It's usually with BJJ, you're thinking position before submission.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't really in the best position to submit him in half guard with that kind of choke. I would have liked if he just kind of postured up and just rained down hammer fists on him. And because considering, I believe in that round, Kevin still outstruck him on the ground. I think it was like 7 to 6 ground strikes, right? There was a lot of issues I picked from that. One I picked was Derek Brunson's cardio.
Yeah.
And cardio was an issue for sure.
Well, it's just if I felt like it would have been a completely different game if the fight was standing up a little bit more, was because Kevin scored a knockdown in the first, pretty much. I think it was in the first or second round. Yeah, I think it was the second round.
It was both rounds.
Both rounds.
Both rounds. He got a knockdown
when he hit him with a really strong right up against the cage, and then he actually stumbled at one point. His hand touched the ground. So the rules is, if you hit someone, the only way to score the knockdown is if your hand touches the ground, so that means it's a legitimate knockdown. So that was what made the round just a little bit more razor thin. But Derek just resorted to using his takedowns, and he kind and he sort of understood that even though Kevin Holland, even though he's got it's a very high level grappler, he just didn't have enough defense over his offense. So therefore, he just scored more points just from those takedowns, whenever they were significant or not.
Yeah, I think Holland's takedown defense, he's usually got very good takedown defense. He's usually very slippery. He's got very long limbs, similar to Israel Adesanya. And it usually with that height, you can, you know, especially when you're slippery and later in those rounds, you're sweaty, you can pull your legs out a bit quicker and move around. The issue with Holland was not so much his takedown defense. It was that he was headhunting Brunson so much. And there were some shots that he loaded up so much that he would actually fall into the shots and fall into a takedown. You know, he would fall straight into a clinch position. He wouldn't, as soon as he got into the clinch, he wouldn't really work. He wouldn't really either damage him with elbows or completely disengage and keep that range. I really think Holland should have kept that range. As soon as he got into the clinch, get out as fast as possible, stay at range, right? Because he's got a big reach advantage, right? He would fall into the clinch because Brunson would be patient. I would say Brunson did very well with his patience. Definitely ratted out sometimes because he looked like he got rocked in that first round especially, and maybe a little bit in that second round. He was patient. But Holland would fall into a shot, miss, and then fall straight into a clinch, and Brunson would then, you know, make sure that he's unable to leave the clinch, then do the takedown, and then from there on he kind of just smothered him and did just enough for the ref not to stand up. To be honest, that second round was probably the most kind of work he did trying to get the submission. Third, fourth, and fifth,
just trying to keep his lead.
Was just trying to keep his lead. The issue was, at one point, was with me, was that Herb Dean was the ref for this fight. And he, when Kevin Holland was on top against Derek Brunson and took him down, Kevin Holland's talking to him, talking some shit, right? And then Herb Dean goes, "Oi, get busy, do your thing, or I'm going to stand up." And I'm like, hang on. Brunson was doing the exact same thing. No, he wasn't talking, right? I know Kevin Holland's talking, but Brunson was on average, he probably had around 2.5, 3 minutes, even as max as 4 minutes of control time on the ground, but only got maybe six or seven significant strikes. That's a very short. He's throwing only maybe 2 strikes a minute
some
on the ground.
Some degree of bias going on, probably.
I think there was a little degree of bias, but Brunson did what he had to do. He did just enough for Holland to kind of, you know.
Yeah, well, it was enough to get the win.
It was enough to get the win.
And what was it? Well, in the end, did you see Kevin Holland put up his hand as soon as... Yeah,
yeah, he was just being funny, well as he was doing, like, a lot of people were saying he was doing a reverse Khabib. He was on the bottom getting smothered, going, "Talk now, let's talk now." It was very strange, to be honest.
But now Brunson's calling out Paulo Costa. Now, Paulo Costa, again, has been making a few waves.
Well, he pulled out of the Robert Whittaker fight.
Yeah, because he had COVID.
Yeah, apparently it's not COVID. Apparently he's...
He's got the flu.
He's got the flu, apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently there was some COVID issues earlier.
Yeah.
And then now he's just got he's got flu-like symptoms, but... Yeah. Apparently not COVID.
Yeah, which can, but however, the flu can lead to COVID and all that. Because his immune system is quite compromised right now. So with COVID still going around, it could be a chance. But what I wanted to bring up was he just keeps making all these waves. Like he said, one of the reasons why he lost to Israel Adesanya was because he got drunk the night before and he was hungover.
I could believe that, to be honest.
You can believe
that? I can believe that.
What's your argument?
That he said he was having horrible muscle cramps, right? Horrible muscle cramps, and I think Paolo, and I kind of like Paolo, to be honest, but he does stupid shit, and a stupid thing to do is to drink wine, because wine is a form of alcohol, right? Oh yeah, the best thing for muscle cams is what? Let's get even more dehydrated.
Yeah.
Let's go mess with our diuretic hormone. Like, that makes no sense, right? What I think he was trying to do was trying to just get to sleep by passing out, right? He's trying to bring his heart rate down as alcohol as a depressant and then fall asleep, right? I think the nerves probably was a factor as well. I think he couldn't fall asleep because of the time zone, as well as the muscle cramps are probably an issue because he cuts a serious amount of weight, right? I actually believe it. I actually think it was true. But
there's other ways to get to sleep.
There's other ways to get to sleep. You can take melatonin. Yeah. You know, there's plenty of people on standby, right, that you could probably ask them. I know you're in a bubble, right, but you can ask, look, I can't fall asleep. You know, I want to put on my best performance. Can someone go and get me something, like even some magnesium?
Yeah, okay, get me some zinc.
Get some magnesium or can I take some melatonin supplement and that will pop you out like a light, right? And there will be no issues with drug testing or anything like that. I think the pressure got to him. He was feeling really like overwhelmed. And then he's got all these muscle cramps. He's thinking, oh, no. Oh, no. This is the first time I'm gonna, you know, be in this amazing championship fight, right, as a title contender. I want to beat Izzy. He's been talking shit. I've been talking shit. I've got these muscle cramps. How am I going to go to sleep, right? And he just panicked, right? And he drank. And I think it was a very, very stupid mistake. But I think 10 times out of 10, Izzy beats Costa on any night. He was just – this wasn't a back and forth. It wasn't a close fight, right, where, oh, maybe if Costa was in the right shape, he would have been faster and sharper and had better timing. Izzy picked him apart, and we knew that. We knew Izzy was going to pick him apart because – Costa has large telegraph strikes, and usually he butchers people. He tenderizes him. He's not really so much the eraser, he's the tenderizer. He kind of tenderizes you with punches over and over and over, like the Uriah Hall fight. He just beat him down physically, right? Until Uriah could no longer stand under the pressure. He doesn't have one shot knockout power. He knocks him down. And I was really interested to see how we would go with Robert Whittaker. But now that he's pulled out, and now who came in against Robert Whittaker now?
Kevin Gastelum.
So that was supposed to happen a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a good fight to have because they were originally meant to fight for the title, but Robert Whittaker pulled out. I believe
that was back in 2018, 2019. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was...
He had a collapsed bout as well as a hernia. External hernia. Yeah.
And then that on that card... Silver fought Adesanya. So that's why it was meant to be like the middleweight card, really.
Yeah, exactly. And that was what the issue was when, you know, Kelvin would then walk around with the belt.
He won it.
Yeah, it did act like he won it.
Yeah, that was quite strange. I think he was one of the shortest, title reigns as well, because he lost it in his next fight straight away to Adesanya. His first defense.
I would argue he was never really the champ because he never fought Robert Whittaker. But
Sober Costa still undefeated.
Sober Costa is still undefeated. That's what he likes to say. I like that he's still making a little bit of a meme out of himself. He usually does. He's the one that calls himself King of Bitches. But coming back to the earlier question, like, should they make Brunson versus Costa? I think they should, but I do not like Brunson's. I don't like Brunson's, you know, chances. I wasn't.
They're not that high. They're not very high.
I wasn't impressed by Brunson's performance, to be honest. And I like Brunson. I actually think he's a really nice guy. But when you take the likability out of it, I don't think he has the skill set to beat Costa. I think Costa will be incredibly motivated, and although he probably doesn't have the best cardio either, I was a bit disappointed with how low Brunson's striking ability was on the ground. Not striking ability, but the amount of volume of strike was on the ground. I know he's a high, he can stand with some high level strikers if he wants to, especially when he's patient and not running into shots, which he used to do. But when he took down Holland, I was expecting him to really pressure him a lot with shots over and over. And that only really happened in the first round. Second, third, fourth, and fifth didn't really happen. And he only won, I think he only really won those rounds because he would smother Holland, and Holland was obsessed with getting a submission off his back due to his Brazilian jiu-jitsu background, and it wasn't a smart game plan, right? And also he was very interested in talking to Habib rather than his own coaches that know him better. I think Brunson versus Costa is a very interesting fight. It was supposed to happen actually before the Brunson versus Holland fight was actually secured. They actually already made posters for it and everything. It was basically the fans getting interested for Brunson and Costa, but I would like to see that fight. I would take Costa in that fight. I don't like Brunson's chances. I think he really needs to work on his cardio.
Well, he's 37. He's been fighting for quite an extensive amount of time. However, he jumps quite a queue. So Derek Brunson, 7th, and Paulo Costa, 2nd. He skips over Jared Cannonier in 3rd. I feel like that could have been a very good fight.
I think so. A lot of people had actually said Brunson versus Cannonier would be a good fight as well.
Because Till's 4th and he's fighting Marvin Vettori and he's fighting that in a few weeks. And then you got Jack Manderson. I can't remember. Oh, he's fighting Edmund Shabazi, who's 12th.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so that's also a bit of a jump for Shabazi.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they should make that fight. It would be an interesting fight. However, I do not like Brunson's chances. He's done a bit better now. I think he's on a 3-fight win streak now.
Yeah.
He's became much more of a patient striker, right? But he absorbs a lot of shots, to be honest. In order to wrestle them down, he can absorb a lot of shots, and that's where he can get hurt. I mean, that first round could have gone a different way if Holland just connected, you know? Yeah, it was an interesting fight. I learned a few bits and pieces off Kevin Holland. You know, a bit too aggressive, falls into the clinch. Questionable takedown defense in the clinch. Good takedown defense when they're apart, but questionable takedown defense in the clinch. Now, this is something that I wanted to bring up, right? And I know it wasn't said that we were going to talk about this beforehand, but I think, and it would be interesting to think what you think as well, Kevin Holland should move to welterweight.
Okay, what's your argument for it?
Because he's kind of in between weight classes. He actually eats and drinks to get to 185, right? He's probably around the 177, 178 mark, right? And that's where he comfortably sits. Now, he doesn't do a huge amount of strength and conditioning. He's mentioned that he's going to increase his strength and conditioning amount, although he doesn't like it. But he's a funny character. He doesn't have a nutritionist. He doesn't eat the best food. He eats some questionable diet, a very relaxed diet, to be honest. And I think if he brought a nutritionist in, and he said himself, if I bring a nutritionist in, I could make 170, I think he would be a dangerous 170. I think the amount of height he has would definitely play a huge factor. And I think he's not essentially a middleweight fighter. He doesn't cut to middleweight. When you compare a Paulo Costa and a Yoel Romero, they cut a serious amount of weight to make middleweight. Mm. I understand Holland doesn't have a huge amount of muscle mass where he can just water load and then cut really. He doesn't have a whole lot on his frame.
Yeah, however, that's correct. He's not a big middleweight. He's not a big middleweight.
Look. But he doesn't really cut to middleweight. He actually said, look, expect me to be a little bit underweight for the middleweight fight with Brunson and then for that weight to come down. That weight's coming down. He like eats up and drinks a fair bit to make that weight. That's not the correct way to do it.
I feel like he just doesn't want to cut in general because he feels he might be weaker from the cut. However, if I feel like
there's a different way, I know if there's a different way.
Yeah. What if like he just got his nutrition on point, you know, and he took his strength conditioning a little bit more seriously, then he wouldn't have to make so much effort at middleweight and could be a little bit more comfortable at middleweight.
There's an insight I have on Kevin Holland now, and it definitely showed in that Brunson fight. Kevin Holland's interesting. He doesn't really eat that well. He doesn't really enjoy strength and conditioning, but he loves training, right? But he takes a very relaxed approach, incredibly relaxed approach. And and even the talking shit in between rounds and during rounds, my insight into Kevin Holland is that he's an incredibly gifted striker, right? But the issue with his personality is he doesn't want to go 100%. Because if he goes 100% and he loses and he took it seriously, then he doesn't have the excuse to say, I didn't give it my all. And if I did these certain things, I could have beat him. I could have done this. I could have done that. I think he's personally self-sabotaging himself, actually. I think Kevin Holland needs to change a few things. He needs to take it a lot more seriously. I think for him to be relaxed and do all this thing is great for his performance, right? But him not eating right and not taking it seriously is actually self-sabotaging himself. He is putting in these performances and he's not really taking them that seriously. I know he's incredibly athletically gifted in that, but he's also holding himself back. He doesn't want to go 100%, right? Because if he loses and he gave it his all, that would hurt his psyche and his confidence a shit ton, because he knows I was outclassed. Me on my best night got beaten. What do I have to do? He doesn't want to be in that scenario. He wants to know that this guy couldn't beat me on my best night. I did this to myself. Mm. I didn't take this seriously. I was eating donuts and random stuff during fight camp. That's the issue with Kevin Holland. He hasn't taken it seriously. If he employs a nutritionist, 100%, I could see him as a title contender at welterweight. But he needs to take it seriously. And that was the same thing I was kind of mentioning about some of these middleweights. They're kind of bloated welterweights.
Some of the disproportion between a lot of them is insane. Like,
it's like 170 to 185. There's 15 pounds in between. If you're stuck in between, it's a horrible time.
Well, 15 pounds, so what's that in kilos?
About seven kilos.
Oh, that's massive. Not even that, but you got like the ones who are trying to kill themselves to get to middleweight by cutting down, and there's the ones who are trying to bump them up so high. Like Darren Till is one of those who tries to bump himself up to middleweight rather than cut it, because he used to be a welterweight.
And he doesn't really have to now. His cut to welterweight was intense.
Yeah.
Now, he probably walks around like a light heavyweight, right? But he cuts to middleweight, and he's huge. How did he ever make welterweight?
Yeah. But then you got Paulo Costa, who has to fucking kill himself and dehydrate so much to get to middleweight.
Easily I think it's 215 pounds or something like that.
He cut so much water weight and all that. And then we had the IV drip situation. And then we also had people who just walk around it. There's not many that walk around at middleweight naturally. Kevin Holland is one of the very few that kind of walks around.
He's kind of underweight.
Underweight, yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me, to be honest. I don't think it's really that good an idea to be. You're kind of undersized. And especially when you're typically a striker.
Yeah.
And when you're underneath, and we saw this with Izzy, he was underweight. You know, when you have a bigger, heavier person that outweighs you, because now they've rehydrated, there's now a 20-pound difference, which means someone's 10 kilos heavier than you.
Yeah.
Maybe in the first two rounds, that doesn't make a huge difference, right? Maybe you're really good and you're really technical on the ground and you're able to scramble, inch out and get up to your feet, right? Third, fourth, and fifth. That weight does make a difference, especially when they're on top of you and they're smothering you like Brunson did. And I think it'll only get harder from then on. Mm-hmm. There's no difference in the amount of grapplers at welterweight and middleweight. There's no real difference, right? What I'm trying to say is Holland would have a huge size difference at welterweight if he employed a proper nutritionist. And I think welterweight, he's a proper welterweight. He's at middleweight, he's kind of not out of shape because he's got incredible cardio, but he's not eating the right stuff. He could make 170 and he could be a title contender. I think Kevin Holland needs to move to 170, and I think he needs to take the sport a little bit more seriously and take himself a little bit more seriously, for sure.
I mean, he's got four wins on his win streak. He fought four times last year.
Mm.
You know, he was probably one of the most active fighters. He's still quite young as well. He's in like 20. He's still got plenty of time to go. It's his mouth that's really cost him, because he was on Dana White's Contender Series and Dana didn't want to sign him because he kept talking during the fight. And Dana does not like that.
I think Kevin Holland does really well against people that are, you know, proper middleweights, right? When he fought Jacare Souza, he did really well, right? Yeah. Caught him off guard as well. How do you say it? Is it
Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Buckley.
Yeah.
He's kind of like an overweight middleweight, to be honest. And that's when he succeeded knocking him out. Now, the person he had an issue was in one of his last wins was Darren Stewart, to a split decision. Darren Stewart is essentially, because we saw him fight against Eric Anders last week, right? Unfortunately, that didn't go his way. But they're essentially light heavyweights. They're massive middleweights, massive. Right? And that's when he had an issue. He beat him by split decision, but that's a close fight.
Yeah.
That is a close fight, right? I think Kevin Holland does really well against people that are, you know, usually in between welterweight or welterweight and middleweight, right? As soon as they're big and they've got a huge amount of size on him, that puts a lot of issues. And Brunson was, that showed. Showed a lot.
We watched the co-main event as well, Ken Song versus Max Griffin. Now, I actually really, really enjoyed this fight because it caught my attention right off the bat when straight away they started swinging. The two came out swinging straight away. Now, Ken Song, he comes from a very good taekwondo background.
Mm.
So he was throwing some really quick side kicks, some really quick leg kicks as well.
I thought he was personally winning the round. I thought he was winning the round at the start. I thought he was connecting with the cleaner shots, but Griffin just caught him.
Yeah, Griffin just caught him with that right hand, and then what he's got. Sorry,
just followed up after. There was a questionable hit afterwards to the back of the head when he was slumped down.
That was the thing I was going to ask you. So he just caught him with that right hand up. So he caught him with a right hand against the cage, then Keenan backed up against the cage, and then he hit him with another couple of swings. And as he was going down, he sort of like hit him again in the back of the head, and then Keenan was kind of out. It just caught him off guard, but Max Griffin, he just rushed at him. He had such an aggressive style.
Even tried to take him down, but no, like, Keenan Song has pretty good takedown defense, and he managed to get out of there.
Yeah, and well, a lot of I think Max was a bit of a favorite, betting favorite, but not by much. I mean, he's definitely up and coming now. But the thing is, I want to count out Song too early. He's got an extensive.
I thought he looked very good.
Yeah, he was fast. His kicks were so fast. Mm. One thing that's becoming I have a lot of respect for is just a side kick, like from the orthodox stance, rather than having to swing for a roundhouse, just pick up that front leg. Because normally when you see guys who are taekwondo or karate fighters, is they like usually go for that wide leg horse stance and try and stand a little bit upright, so they cut a little bit of even weight disproportion between two feet, and then sort of bounce around so they can swing off that front leg or swing off that back leg, rather than if it was a Thai stance, they normally have it upright on the back leg and just bounce that front foot. So that's why and Keenan, I was like, woof, if he catches Max with one of those kicks, he would have probably put an end to the fight there. But the other thing was the aggression from both sides. Like, they didn't normally, when we watch those fights, some fighters, you know, they star.
There was no feeling out.
There was no feeling out. There was absolutely no feeling out. Max just went, right, let's go.
Yeah.
I like his...
He was very comfortable in the chaos, I would say. He was very calm and composed. I think Song, he hadn't fought in a year.
Yeah.
His last fight was Callum Potter, although he did KO him. That was back in February of last year, right?
Yeah.
A year is a long time for an MMA fighter. Really, really long time. And I think he didn't look as comfortable in the chaos as Max Griffin.
Yeah, Max, it's a scary thing to want to trade hands, because all it takes is one punch to take it down. And then, especially right off the first round, when you're both fresh and you have a lot of energy. So really all it takes is one. You see them swinging at the end when their power has just gone. sort of just died a little bit, so there's not going to do as much damage and try and more points. But the fact that both wanted to just stand and trade right in the center of the octagon, not, they didn't even touch fists, they just went bang right into each other.
I know you mentioned the sidekick, and I think it was definitely something that was working against Griffin, because Griffin likes to cut distance really quickly, and he does really well when he pressures you up in the cage, and that's essentially that's what he did to Song and then knocked him out. That last shot was questionable to the back of the head. However, you know, I would already say that Song was already out. Then when he slumped down, Griffin managed to get one more shot. Unfortunately, it did go to the back of the head, but he was already out, and the ref really should have stepped in at that point anyway. I wouldn't say it's Griffin's fault. It's essentially, it's a moving target, and you may not hit the right spot. I know you mentioned the sidekick, and I think the sidekick definitely was working at the start, though. It was really good for controlling range. Any time for a Taekwondo fighter, they really do love to use that front leg sidekick, just because even a front leg for a front leg push kick as well, it's essentially just an intercepting kick. You don't have to. It's less telegraphed than a rear roundhouse kick or something like that. They can come to you, and you can catch them with that front leg very easily. And all you have to do is just pop that out, hit them in the solar plexus, and it will have a lot more power than a body kick. Mm-hmm. Now, it won't be as powerful as a skipping sidekick or a rear sidekick. However, it's not telegraphed. It's nice and quick, and it's able to control range really quickly. Your legs are your longest limb, and it's a really smart move with some of these Taekwondo fighters that come from South Korea. Mm. Really, really smart move. And they do use it in karate as well, like the Wonder Boy Thompson. He uses the...
Yeah.
But he often uses it in a sliding or skipping sidekick as an attacking form.
Yeah. Also to knock him off balance as well.
He's
known for that. He's known for when they try and throw a punch at him and they put too much weight on that back foot, the front foot, he just hits with that sidekick and they just usually go knock down.
I would argue that Song was winning those exchanges, right, until Griffin hit him.
Yes.
And unfortunately, you know, unfortunately for Song, but fortunately for Griffin, he knocked him out. He knocked him out really, really clean. One of those shots definitely stumbled him back. And Song was, you know, moving back, connected again, boom, the lights were out. Managed to get another shot in after his questionable shot to the back of the head. But Griffin did what he was supposed to do. I think it was the first round, maybe a minute 33 or something like that.
It was 2 minutes and 20 seconds into the
first
round.
2 minutes and 20 seconds, sorry.
Yeah. What is it? Max Griffin just rebounded off his loss to Alex Oliveira.
He was on a two-fight losing streak. No. I think he had another... No. He didn't rebound off a loss because he had a loss. He had two losses, one to Alex Moreira.
And the other one was to Thiago Alves.
And to Alex Oliveira, he lost to. But no, his last fight was a win.
Yeah, his last fight was a win over... No, his last fight before that was Alex Oliveira. That was a decision.
His last fight was against Ramiz Brahimaj last year. It was on the Santos Teixeira card. Do you remember?
Yeah.
By Dr. Stoppage.
Yeah, Ramiz Brahimaj. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one he won in November 8th. Oh, yeah, sorry. I have my dates mixed up. But he lost to Alex Oliveira at the beginning of last year.
Yeah. So this is him starting to start that climb again. He was on a two-fight losing skid, then won against Ramos last year, and now he's on a two-fight win streak. Unfortunately for Griffin, he seems to have the issue with sustaining a win streak. You know, this is the first time he's been on a two-fight win streak in quite a few years. And to be honest, he's just been set up with some tough fighters. He's been set up against Thiago Alves, who's a UFC vet, Curtis Melenda, as well as... he's been set up against a lot of tough individuals. And that's made it a little bit difficult for him to steam forward. Like, in the UFC, he hasn't been on a two-fight win streak ever.
Yeah.
So this is the first time he's ever had a two-fight win streak. And now... I think he's looking for higher and higher fighters in terms of ranking.
Yeah, it's just a lot of pressure to maintain a win streak.
It is. Now, Griffin, he's about 37, 38, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a little bit older as a UFC vet, but he's got to continue to obviously make money for his family. Now, I do not know who should fight next because, unfortunately, it's difficult to look at the rankings that are outside the top 15.
Well, it's just the welterweight divisions. I would say in terms of what's stacked, I would say number one, lightweight division. Number two is welterweight division because there's just so many stuff. There's so much star power now. It's just...
Sorry, he's 35.
Anyway, so Australia's own Tai Tuivasa. Bam, bam. Knocked down Harry Hunsucker in his... Hunsucker's debut. Now, the biggest change to Tai Tuivasa was his use of leg kicks. He just teased him with those leg kicks within the first 10 seconds.
Kicked one of his legs out.
Yeah, huh?
Kicked one of his legs out as well.
What happened was Tai literally just in the first 10 seconds, bang, leg kick, and you just heard that crack. And then Harry just like, he was just from a straight face to a glare. Like he was poking the Rottweiler a little bit. Hit him with a couple shots. Tai Tuivasa again, couple leg kicks. And I feel like he was trying to tease Harry into an exchange because it was that third leg kick. That's when Harry started really swinging. Tai just caught him with that massive right hand and then just knocked him down. It was short and it was sweet. There was no shoey though.
No, unfortunately, there was no shoey.
Even Michael Bisping was saying that on the commentary. It's like, wow, you can go celebrate Tai, but you're not having my shoe.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting for Tai now because he was coming off a win against Steven Struve on the UFC 254 card. Did very well. Now that's a two-fight win streak, and I believe both were in the first round, KOs in the first round. Now.
Yeah.
Now, I think the main difference in Tai's skills is his striking ability as well as he's comfortable with grappling scenarios because he's moved some of his training to AKA. So he employs a lot of help from Daniel Cormier as well. You know, they're pretty close, and Daniel actually calls him up before the fight and talks to Tai and able to just run through a game plan with him and see how he's doing. But Tai's actually, he's definitely improved his skill set. He's definitely got even more time to grow. But I'm very impressed with the striking ability, and he seems to be a lot more comfortable with getting into any grappling scenarios and any of the scrambles, to be honest. I feel like he's improved greatly by training at AKA alongside some very good kickboxers.
Yeah. So ever since his debut in 2017 to Rashad Coulter, which is one, he's since then won one, two. He's got wins over legends like Andre Orlovsky, Cyril Asker. He's also got a win over, what's his name? Then 2019 wasn't the best year for him. He lost twice, one to Sergey Spivak and to Blagoj Ivanov. God, his names. And then he got
knocked out by JDS as well.
Yes, that's right. And then he came back and beat Stefan Struve and Tai. Now, one thing about Tai is that he said openly in his post-fight interview that he's here to entertain the fans. All of all his fights, only one has ever gone to decision, right? And he normally two have gone to decision, and he just says openly in his interview, he just doesn't want to play around in the cage. He wants to go in there and he just wants to finish it. He believes that's what gets him respect, and that's what gets him the fear from other fighters. But also, I believe Tai got knockout of the night. I think.
I believe so. Yeah. I understand what you're meaning, right? He's definitely an entertaining fighter to watch because majority of his fights end in the first round. I mean, there's a whole reason why he got signed to the UFC. He got signed to the UFC as an undefeated fighter, right? But he was KOing people. His entire record before fighting in the UFC, I believe he was about maybe 7 or 8-0, and every fight he knocked the person out in the first round, right? He's definitely a fan-pleasing person to watch, and I'm just happy that he's moved some of his training to AKA, and he's able to improve his kickboxing ability as well as he definitely can employ you can just learn a lot more about grappling because a lot of the time Ty would get he'd have amazing power in his hands, right? I've seen his cardio go up as well, but the issue was put him on his back,
yeah,
and he's not able to get up. He can obviously strike from the bottom. He's still dangerous from the bottom because still you can be KO'd from the bottom, but he would be smothered by a pressure of a grappler, and it would be something that would be kind of his kryptonite, his weakness. But Ty has managed to be a little bit more comfortable in the grappling scrambles, and that means when you're more comfortable in the grappling scenarios, you're also more comfortable in trading because you don't need to worry so much about overextending because, you know, as soon as you go down, you're comfortable there in those grappling scenarios. So I'm happy for Ty. For Ty to, you know, to be, he was dealt a lot of really tough fighters, specifically JDS, I would say. And JDS, I would say, is, I know he's left the UFC, he's been removed. However, at the time, JDS, absolute world beater. Absolutely insane to watch. Definitely one of the best heavyweights in the UFC that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Now,
I do believe that one day Ty Tuivasa will break the record for most knockouts in heavyweight history because he's got 11 wins. Only one of them is by decision.
Yes.
So that's why he's on his way. What was the other?
He gives me like Mark Hunt vibes, to be honest. Just because of that Polynesian background as well.
Yeah.
I think he's part Polynesian and he's part Aborigine.
He is, because he always has a flag with him.
Yeah, he brings the Aboriginal flag with him, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's official. Khabib is retired. Now, let me just start off right off the bat by asking you two questions, Jack. Number one, let's have a little bit of discussion. Do you reckon he's the GOAT? Number two, do you reckon it was worth retiring at this point?
I think that he could be the GOAT lightweight championship,
yeah,
champion fighter, but he is not in GOAT of all time or anything like that. But he came to the UFC with a very, I try not to use padded record, but some of his fights were just two rounders, right?
Yeah.
Which essentially don't really count. If it's not a 3-round fight, they don't count in professional MMA. Had a little bit of a padded record before he came into the UFC, right? However, when he came into the UFC, he was built up, and the people that he's beat, that resume speaks for itself. You know, he's got Justin Gaethje. Unfortunately, he didn't get the Tony Ferguson fight, but you know that's unfortunate. We may get a Tony Ferguson versus Islam Makhachev in the future. That would be amazing. But then they've got Conor McGregor, Dustin Gaethje. You've got
Dustin Poirier.
Sorry.
Yep.
You got Izzin Barboza.
Yeah.
I believe, did he beat RDA?
Yeah.
So these that's impressive, right? And those last three fights he had in the UFC, he submitted them.
Yeah.
All of them, and in terrific fashion. I think his pressure and his grappling ability is second to none. I think he's an incredible grappler. Even though he was kind of one-dimensional, I would say Islam Makhachev is a more well-rounded fighter just because his kickboxing ability and striking ability is much higher than Khabib's.
Yeah, because we had a lot of people were criticizing Khabib's striking when he first started UFC.
It was not good.
But now he's spent so much time in American Kickboxing Academy, it's really, really built up.
Definitely built up. Because obviously, it's not his strength.
Yeah. There was two things that I noticed. First thing was, I've been told, is that when he won his first fight in the UFC, it was via triangle, and now he won his last fight in the UFC via triangle. And if you actually look at the photos, what they do is they have first round versus Khabib, second round versus Khabib. Like, they already look gassed. Mm-hmm. And he's just known for that relentless pressure. Do I think it was the right time to retire? Absolutely. You know what I think? I think it would have been a nice one more, maybe one more, but, you know, of course, because he loves it.
I would prefer to have maybe a 30, you know?
Yeah.
It would have been cool for him to fight someone like Charles Oliveira.
Yeah. Well, the only two arguments, I believe, were Charles Oliveira or, what's his name, Charles Oliveira or Michael Chandler. But thing is, if you give Chandler that quickly when he's only had one fight in the UFC and you know, we'll talk about that subject next about Oliveira and Chandler. But
I would have Oliveira versus Habib. Yeah. I believe Oliveira stylistically would be the worst matchup out of all of them, yeah, to be honest.
And because there wasn't going to be a Poirier versus Khabib too, because Poirier had no interest. Poirier wants the money fight. He wants to fight Conor McGregor again.
And yeah, again, that's another also don't think he wanted to chase Habib. But to be honest, it's tough because Habib's made a promise to his mother.
Yeah.
Right. And essentially, if his mom ever said yes to it, he would. I assume he could come back. But I think that fire in him has kind of died as a fighter, and he's transitioned more to a coach.
Yeah.
And I think as a coach, he's got a huge amount of experience and a huge amount of information he can tell people, especially wrestling-wise. Although he was a bit one-dimensional, his grappling ability was such a high level that it kind of just...
transcended the sport.
It kind of just... everyone succumbed to that pressure. Yeah. They just could... you just knew that Habib was going to take them down. It was it was a guarantee. Whether it was a 3-rounder or a 5-rounder, we knew that Habib was going to take them down. Yeah. That pressure that he had, as well as his terrific cardio, was definitely his main, his best suited ability. I think he really should have. It's tough because I believe he's 31.
Yeah.
To leave while you're in your prime is not that good.
Yeah, well, there's only three people that have ever retired on as championship status. Sure, St. Pierre, Henry Cejudo, and now Khabib. Khabib, the only thing that Khabib has, when it comes to the GOAT argument of who is the GOAT, and that could be, we could spend a whole podcast again arguing our favor. I do agree with you, though, that he is the lightweight GOAT. However, the one thing he has over everyone is that he has not lost. He's undefeated.
And he wins. There's majority of the fights, he dominates.
Yes.
They're all...
And then there's the argument, you know, maybe he's lost a couple of rounds here and there, but he dominates.
Maybe lost the fight to Gleison Tibau.
Yeah.
But I would argue Gleison Tibau, although he was a 155er at the time, he did a huge amount of cutting. He was 180 pounds when he was there. Although you can make the argument that doesn't really matter because Dustin Poirier, when he fought Conor McGregor, he was around 180 as well. Mm-hmm. So, look, I think Habib can't be in the GOAT status because he never went up a division.
Yeah, and Conor put a post out about that as well.
Yeah.
Because if you're having trouble weight cutting, because Khabib had trouble weight cutting.
Yeah.
And then you can just go up a division and all that, and he did that emoji as well. But we also noticed, because ever since Khabib's left the UFC, he's been getting he's got a bit thick.
Yeah, he's easily 200 pounds now. Easily.
Yeah, he's definitely bloated up. But
he's going to eat heavy before Ramadan. Yeah. Then when it's Ramadan, he's going to be... starving for food, yeah. But that was also the issue with Habib was, obviously his religion is very important to him, but Ramadan actually made it very difficult for him to fight regularly. Yeah. And then for him to leave at 31 in his prime, not even his prime yet, right, is unfortunate. Yeah. It feels like he has so much more potential for him to then fight in a 170 fight or continue at 155 and beat all these challenges and just cement his name in history. Now, I think he... some people think BJ Penn is probably the best lightweight fighter. However, he kind of tarnished his legacy...
By keep going
yeah, when he was not in the right state, right? I think he was 6-fight losing streak or something like that. Not good.
Yeah. So you either retire a champion or you live long enough to see yourself lose.
And I think that's why Habib kind of retired as well. He knew that he wasn't forever. You're a champion today, but you won't be champion tomorrow. I understand that. But 31 in your prime. I mean, a lot of lightweight fighters are probably going to continue to fight like Dustin Poirier until they're maybe 37, 38, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if Habib continued to fight for another 6 or 7 years. If he continued to win for 6 or 7 years, there would be no argument, right? Mm. But the issue with him is he won his title against Raging Al, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who probably shouldn't have been in title contention anyway. It wasn't supposed to happen. But he then cemented it when he fought Conor and Dustin and Justin, right? really amazing performances, right? Submitted all of them, right? But the issue is he only defended his title 3 times.
Yeah,
and that's an issue. That's the reason why Conor doesn't get as much attention as he should, because he never defended the featherweight title and he never defended the lightweight title. He got it, he achieved his goal, wasn't interested anymore, lost it, right? There some other things happened in the way did the boxing fights and things like that. But the issue was never defended it, right? Yeah. Habib did defend it only 3 times though. When we think of GOAT of all time, we think of GSP.
Yeah.
Defended it
multiple times.
I think 11 times.
Yeah.
But he was also in 13 title fights.
We also think of like John Jones, because he never really lost the lightweight title either. I mean,
no, he just relinquished it. It was vacant. So the issue with Habib is that it could still be argued whether he is the lightweight GOAT. I would still say he is, but for him to be in any number one status, he would have to beat a lot more opponents, high-level contenders. I think it's unfortunate what happened to his father.
Yes.
And it's really sad.
And he's doing this to respect his mother as well.
And he's doing it to respect his mother, but he needs to understand that that although he will be probably the GOAT of lightweight, he can't be considered the GOAT of all time.
Okay.
Because he has a good resume, but it's not great or excellent. It's a good resume.
Yeah.
Compared to others that have done so much in the sport.
Yeah. Anyway. So now we got to move on to the big cheese. This is the biggest debate. By the way, let's do this topic and take a quick break. The biggest thing that's going on right now is Michael Chandler and Charles Oliveira is fighting for the vacant lightweight title after Khabib officially announced his retirement, which was announced on Friday. People are now giving Chandler so much crap because all the other fighters in the division are like, hey, this guy's had one fight and he gets to fight for the title. Like, it comes from Bellator
I would have thought maybe why not Justin Gaethje?
Yeah,
I thought maybe Justin.
Where was Gaethje in the mix? Like, I haven't heard anything on Gaethje's side.
Unfortunate. And the thing that comes to mind is it said, you know, Justin said, if he gets a title fight before me, I'll probably quit MMA. Are you going to quit MMA now? Because he just got given a title. Obviously a silly thing to say, right? But I don't think it wasn't the smartest move anyway. But Michael Chandler did really well against Dan Hooker. But at the time, Dan Hooker was maybe around number
six,
right? And now he's in the top five now because he beat him very handedly, right? And plus, Conor moved down the ranking because he lost to Dustin Poirier. The issue is Charles Oliveira should totally be in a title fight.
Yeah.
But it probably shouldn't be against Michael Chandler. Yeah. It probably should be against Justin Gaethje or Dustin Poirier. Yeah. However, if Dustin's chasing them, look, the thing is, Dustin could have chased the belt.
He could have, but he's not interested in.
He could have chased the belt and then arguably won the belt, then defended against Conor, and Conor could have jumped the queue because he wants the money fight. They could have done it that way.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he wanted to do the rematch against, he was very set on the money fight against Conor and beating him in that trilogy, right? And it's kind of cost him a title fight because now Michael Chandler versus Charles Oliveira is going to happen. We know that Chandler versus Oliveira is going to happen on I think, May 15th, UFC 262. That's the only fight that has really been confirmed for UFC 262. But no real word has been happening on when the McGregor versus Poirier fight will occur. Most likely in June.
June, that's what I've heard,
maybe even as late as July, which means if Dustin or Conor were to win, they wouldn't be able to then sub in for the following fight at UFC 262 because it's coming after 262. Mm-hmm. So, look, whoever wins out of the McGregor versus Dustin Poirier fight means that they can then call out the definite champion of Chandler versus Oliveira, which is good. I'm glad we've got a little bit clarity. I'm glad it's now a vacated belt and we've got a little bit clarity on what's going on. Dana, it hasn't really been Habib holding up the division. It's been Dana holding up the division,
yeah,
being a bit silly. But It's a good fight. It's Chandler versus Olivier is a good fight. But
it's definitely a good fight, but it's just talking about what's fair. You know, Chandler was just talking of going back and forth with Islam Makhachev because Makhachev does not like Chandler at all. He wanted him, and then Chandler was like, okay, let's go then. He's ready to go. Well, one thing about I respect about Chandler though is he has a great sense of professionalism. You know what I mean? Like he wants to be in good relations with the UFC. He was there in Abu Dhabi. He was ready to go in case, you know, Gaethje or Khabib did not make weight. He made weight himself, rocks up, makes weight professional, makes against Hooker, knocks him down first round. He had a bit of over-the-top celebration, but he's been waiting for his opportunity to get into the UFC for a while. You know, they've capitalized it. The UFC understands now he's definitely a big player. You know, he's built up all these things, but do I think it's time for him to go straight away into a title picture? Not quite, but...
Beat number six, and that's your first fight in the UFC.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great for your resume, right? But yeah. It's just, it doesn't put you back. The issue was they don't want to wait around with a vacated belt for McGregor and Poirier to fight and then for them to put it together.
Yeah. Well, he said that when he made his announcement at the end of the Dan Hooker fight, he said he wanted Khabib, he wanted Conor, he wanted Dustin, one of the three. He didn't, not Oliveira. Not even that, but he even openly stated that.
Bless you.
Thank you.
I would argue that perhaps Justin Gaethje, I know he was on a loss to Khabib, however...
You got two very high-star wrestlers.
He's higher-ranked.
Yeah.
He's higher-ranked, and it seems that it's almost disrespectful to Justin Gaethje because Justin Gaethje now doesn't get to fight Charles Oliveira. I mean, honestly, they could have done an interim belt. Bless you. They could have done an interim belt between Justin Gaethje and Charles Oliveira, and then they could have fought against the winner of Dustin Poirier and McGregor for the vacant lightweight belt, and I think that would have been a smarter scenario. Obviously, Chandler, it's a big opportunity for Chandler. And I'm not too sure I'd take it in that fight, to be honest, because Chandler's... He's obviously proven in Bellator, but kind of unproven in the UFC, whereas Charles Oliveira is coming off a massive win streak, last win against Tony Ferguson was...
What put him...
Dominant.
Put him on the map, really.
And I think his ability off the ground is very good. His striking ability, especially shoot boxing that he's been doing, has really improved his striking really significantly. I think Michael Chandler has a lot of power, but I want to see how the styles match up. It's a very interesting fight. Definitely surprised us hugely for a vacant lightweight belt, and I think they knew exactly what they were doing when they did it. My issue is Justin Gaethje. Where does Justin Gaethje fit into this? Because it sounds like that Kevin Lee meme. Like, where does Kevin Lee fit into this? But where does Justin Gaethje fit into this? Because who's he supposed to fight now? Is he supposed to fight maybe Dan Hooker or someone else? It's weird. It's a weird time for Justin Gaethje because now he's on the sidelines, and I believe he's either number one or number two in the rankings, and he doesn't get, you know, spoken to. It's weird. Perhaps the UFC did try and reach out to him, but he was being a little bit stubborn. I know Justin Gaethje is a little bit stubborn, a little bit hard-headed, but it's unfortunate that he wasn't in the title contention because I believe he deserves to be so, actually.
Yeah,
it's weird. It definitely surprised us.
All right, yeah, fair enough. Anyway, let's take a quick break.